Welcome back, everyone. Today we are going to be doing a deep dive into a case that really shook things up in disability law, Sutton v. United Airlines.
Yeah, this one went all the way to the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court.
And it ended up changing how we understand disability, at least legally speaking.
So this is a big one.
Absolutely. This case gets to the heart of a really complicated question. How do you define disability when someone's using things like medication or glasses to, you know, manage their condition? Sutton really tackled that head on. It was a pretty controversial case, so controversial, in fact, that Congress actually stepped in to change the law.
Wow, Congress had to step in.
They did. It's a fascinating story. This whole episode is going to be about unpacking it all.
Okay, well, let's unpack it then. So where do we even begin?
Well, the case, it all starts with twin sisters Karen Sutton and Kimberly Hinton. They were experienced pilots.
Experienced pilots.
Yeah, and they had this dream of flying for United Airlines. But there was a problem. Their vision was a major obstacle. Oh. They had what's called severe myopia. Basically, they couldn't see clearly without their glasses.
But with glasses, their vision was perfect, right?
Exactly. With glasses, their vision was 20/20, no problem. But United, they had this this really strict rule.
What kind of rule?
Pilots had to have good uncorrected vision. No glasses, no contacts.
So even though they could see perfectly fine with glasses, United still said no. That seems pretty unfair.
Yeah, the sisters definitely thought so. And that's why they decided to sue under the Americans with Disabilities Act. They claimed United was discriminating against them. They said United was focusing on their uncorrected vision and, you know, essentially penalizing them for using a tool that helped them function just as well as anyone else.
Like, they were being punished for needing glasses.
Yeah, that was their argument. It was a really interesting legal strategy.
So this case about vision requirements for pilots ended up in the Supreme Court. How did that happen?
Well, you see, as the case went through the lower courts, it became clear that the implications of this case, they went way beyond just the sisters and, you know, their pilot dreams. The big question here was how the entire country would define disability under the ADA. We're talking about potentially affecting millions of Americans.
So the stakes were pretty high. This wasn't just about eyesight anymore. This was about, like, the legal definition of disability.
Exactly. So, yeah, eventually it made its way up to the Supreme Court.
Okay, and what happened when it got there?
Well, in a 7-2 decision, the Supreme Court sided with United Airlines.
Wait, really? They ruled that because the sisters could see well with glasses, they weren't legally disabled. Doesn't that create a pretty complicated situation?
It definitely did. I mean, how can you exclude people who function perfectly fine with things like glasses or medication?
Yeah.
Well, the majority's opinion was based on the idea that when you're deciding if someone's disabled under the ADA, you have to consider their condition with those corrective measures, you know, like glasses or medication.
So if they're functioning fine with glasses, it doesn't matter.
Essentially, yeah. They argued that the ADA's language focuses on the present. You know, the wording is substantially limited. So they focused on the current limitations, not the potential ones without the corrective measures.
So if someone's doing well with some type of help, the potential limitations without it don't matter.
That's basically what they said. Their argument was that if you ignore those measures, you know, you end up asking employers to basically guess about hypothetical disabilities.
Right. That's a very literal interpretation. Was anyone on the court like, hold on, that doesn't seem right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Two justices dissented. They disagreed pretty strongly, actually. They argued that, you know, Congress clearly meant to protect people even if their disabilities were, you know, correctable.
That makes sense.
One of the justices, Justice Stevens, he pointed out that this blanket vision rule seemed to go against the whole point of the ADA. You know, the ADA is supposed to combat stereotypes and prejudice. Hmm. He was worried that this ruling would basically be like saying, if you can manage your disability with tools or treatments, you're not really disabled.
Yeah, that's a dangerous precedent to set.
Definitely.
What about the argument that maybe the sisters weren't technically disabled under the ADA, but United still regarded them as disabled because of their vision?
Yeah, that's a good point. The sisters did make that argument. But the court said, you know, being seen as unfit for just one specific job, well, that's not enough to trigger the ADA's regarded as protection. That requires a much broader perceived limitation, like across a bunch of jobs, not just one.
So because they were seen as unfit to be a pilot, that wasn't enough, just being unfit for that one specific job.
Yeah, it had to be more general than that. They had to be perceived as limited in a broader sense.
Okay, I can see how that played out legally. but it still feels like a very narrow view of what the ADA was supposed to do.
A lot of people felt that way. And to be honest, the impact of Sutton on ADA cases, it wasn't great for people with disabilities. Lower courts started using Sutton to throw out cases, especially cases where the person's condition was managed with medication or, you know, things like prosthetics. It really limited who the ADA protected.
So Sutton, it actually had a real impact. It made it harder for people to use the ADA to protect themselves. But I'm getting the feeling that's not the end of the story. What happened next?
Remember how we said Sutton was a controversial ruling? Well, all that controversy, it didn't just disappear. People kept talking about it. Disability rights groups kept fighting, and eventually Congress took action.
Wait, Congress actually did something about a Supreme Court ruling?
Yeah.
That's incredible. Tell me more.
Yeah. In 2008, Congress passed the ADA Amendments Act.
The ADA Amendment Act.
It's also called the ADA for short. And this new law, it basically said, hey, Supreme Court, we think you got this one wrong.
Wow. So they actually went against the Supreme Court? Did they totally undo what Sutton did?
Well, on the main issue, the whole mitigating measures thing, yeah. The ADAA basically made it clear when you're figuring out if someone has a disability, you shouldn't consider things like medication, assistive devices, prosthetics. They really broadened the ADA's protection again.
That's huge. That's a big win for disability rights.
Yeah.
But you said most mitigating measures, so I'm guessing there's an exception here.
You're sharp. There is one. Even after all this, needing ordinary glasses or contact lenses still might mean someone isn't considered disabled under the ADA.
Hold on. So even after all that work to basically overturn Sutton, they kept that one part. That doesn't really make sense.
It's definitely a head scratcher. The ADAA doesn't really say why they kept that exception. Some people think that Congress, maybe they were afraid of a ton of lawsuits from people suddenly claiming discrimination just because they needed glasses.
I can see that.
And others, well, they think it just shows that, you know, society as a whole doesn't really see needing glasses as a real disability.
Right.
It's interesting to think about.
It is. So even after the ADAA, Sutton's legacy lives on in that one specific area.
It does. And that's exactly why Sutton is still such an important case to understand. It shows how court decisions can have a huge impact on people's lives, how judges interpret the law can change how we think about something like disability, and how Congress can sometimes step in when the courts maybe go too far away from what the law was originally intended to do.
Yeah, it shows the whole system in action.
It does.
Okay, so after all that back and forth, where do things stand today? What about those twin pilots who just wanted to fly?
Well, because of the ADA, the Sutton sisters, they'd probably have a much stronger case now. Their corrected vision wouldn't be such a big deal. However.
Oh, I know that. However, there's always a however.
There is. Even with the ADA, employers are still allowed to set certain job requirements. They can have standards like, you know, vision standards, as long as they can prove those requirements are absolutely necessary for the job. So United could still argue that pilots absolutely need good uncorrected vision, even though the sisters could see perfectly fine with glasses.
It's possible, yeah. It would be a tough legal battle for sure. The outcome wouldn't be guaranteed. But it's definitely a possibility.
So even after all this, the question of needing glasses and disability, it's still a bit unclear.
It is. It really is. And that actually brings us to another important part of the ADA, what we call the regarded as prong. It can get a little tricky.
Sounds like a whole other deep dive.
It is. But it's really important to understand how the ADA protects people from discrimination, not just based on their actual limitations, but on how other people see them.
Okay, before we get too deep into that, can you just remind us one more time, what exactly does regarded as disabled even mean under the ADA?
It basically means that even if you don't technically meet the ADA's definition of disabled, you're still protected if you're treated as if you have a disability. You know, if you're treated like you have a disability, that would substantially limit a major life activity, right, even if you don't.
So your employer's perception of you matters, even if it's not accurate.
That's exactly it. The regarded as prong is really about fighting discrimination that's rooted in perceptions and stereotypes, not actual limitations.
That makes sense. But, you know, in the Sutton case, the sisters tried to argue that United regarded them as disabled because of their vision, and the court disagreed. What happened there?
Well, the court basically set a really high bar for what regarded as disabled actually means. They said it's not enough for an employer to just think you can't do one specific job. To be protected, the employer has to think that your impairment would limit you in a whole bunch of jobs.
Okay, so in Sutton, the court said it wasn't enough for United to just see the sisters as unfit to be pilots. It had to be broader than that, right?
Right. And that's where things get really interesting when you think about the ADA.
Oh, here we go. Another layer of complexity.
The ADA, remember, it said most mitigating measures shouldn't be considered when figuring out if someone has a disability.
Right, like glasses.
Exactly. But if you can't consider those measures, doesn't that make it even harder to prove someone regarded you as disabled? Because now those measures aren't supposed to be part of the equation.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So what happens now?
Honestly, the courts are still figuring this out. They're still working on how to apply the regarded as prong after the DAA.
So no easy answers.
Not really. It's still a developing area of law. A lot of it comes down to the specific details of each case.
Okay, well, our listeners, especially the lawyers and law students out there, I'm sure they'd love to hear a little more about how the courts are approaching these cases. What are they focusing on?
One important factor is whether the employer's perception, their idea about the person, was it based on, myth, fear, or stereotypes, or was it based on actual facts about the person's abilities?
So if an employer assumes someone can't do a job because of something they believe about the person, even if that belief is wrong, that could be a problem.
Exactly. Let's say someone had cancer in the past, but they're in remission now. Their employer refuses to promote them because they're worried the cancer might come back, even though there's no medical reason to think that. That could be a case of regarded as discrimination because the employer is basing their decision on fear, not on the person's actual ability right now.
Yeah, that seems pretty unfair.
It is. It's important to remember that whatever impairment the employer is focused on, it has to be something that's covered under the ADA.
Okay, so it has to be a physical or mental impairment that actually would limit a major life activity, even if it doesn't in this specific case.
Right. So, for example, if the employer just thinks someone is clumsy or, shy, that wouldn't be enough. It has to be the kind of impairment the ADA was made to protect against.
So just to sum this all up, you have to prove that your employer treated you differently because of a wrong idea they have about an impairment, and that impairment has to be something covered by the ADA.
You got it. That's a great summary. And it shows how important this regarded as prong is. It recognizes that discrimination, it's not always about actual limitations. It can be about fear and bias and prejudice.
And that's exactly what the ADA is trying to prevent. But let's be real, proving that you were discriminated against because of how someone sees you, that's got to be way harder than proving discrimination based on a real disability.
You're absolutely right. It often means relying on, things like what other people heard your supervisor say, or looking for inconsistencies in how the employer treats other employees.
So it's not easy to prove, but it's still important to know that it's an option, especially for people who might not fit perfectly into the ADA's definition of disabled, but are still being treated unfairly because of how other people see them.
I completely agree. It all comes back to the Sutton case and how important it was. Even though the sisters didn't win their case, and even though the ADA didn't completely change how the courts see the regarded as prong, their story reminds us.
It reminds us that the law is always changing.
Right. Yes. And that, an argument that might not have worked a few years ago, well, it might work today.
So we always have to stay informed.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've talked about the regarded as prong, but there's another piece of this puzzle, isn't there? We've got to talk about the balance between reasonable accommodation and an employer's right to set job standards.
Oh, yeah. That's a tricky one. Accommodation versus qualification.
It is, and we're going to dive into that right after this. Welcome back, everyone. So before we went to break, we were talking about this balance between, reasonable accommodations and what an employer needs for the job, right?
Yeah, it's a tricky area. It can get complicated. You've got the right of people with disabilities to have, equal opportunities at work. But employers, they also need to be sure that their employees, can actually do the job.
It's about finding that middle ground, right, where everyone's protected. How does the law actually try to do that?
Well, the ADA, it tries to strike a balance. It requires employers to make what they call reasonable accommodations for employees with disabilities, of course, unless doing so would cause some major problems for the employer.
Okay, hold on. There's some legal stuff in there. Can you break that down for us? What does reasonable accommodation even mean?
It's kind of a broad term, And what's reasonable? Well, that can change depending on the person's disability and the type of job they have. But some common examples are, making the workplace accessible, maybe changing the work schedule, giving someone assistive technology, or even offering some specific training.
So, like changing the work environment, providing tools and support, being flexible. That sounds pretty extensive.
It's meant to be. The idea is to, you know, get rid of anything that might prevent someone with a disability from doing their job well. But like I said, there is a limit.
And that limit is where the employer's rights come in.
Right. Accommodations have to be reasonable. They can't be some huge burden on the employer.
So what if, like, making the accommodation would mean basically rebuilding the whole workplace?
Mm-hmm.
Or if it costs, like, a ton of money, the employer could argue it's not reasonable.
Exactly. That's what we call the undue hardship defense. Courts will look at things like, you know, how much the accommodation would cost, the size of the company, how much money they have, and how much of an impact the change would have on the business overall.
I can see how this can be tricky. You know, it's not just a simple yes or no.
It's not. There are a lot of gray areas. And that's why it's really important for employers and employees both to really understand, like, what the ADA actually says about their rights and what they have to do.
So what about employers? What can they do to make sure they're following, you know, these accommodation requirements? Any tips?
Well, the first thing is to have a written policy, something official that says they're committed to providing reasonable accommodations.
So don't just assume everyone knows the rules. Make it official.
Right. And it's really important to train managers and supervisors, teach them how to handle accommodation requests, how to have those conversations with employees and figure out what accommodations make sense and what might be too much to ask.
So good communication is important, you know, working together to find a solution that works for everyone.
Exactly. And employees, they need to remember that, you know, it's their responsibility to ask for accommodations and to do it clearly and, you know, not wait too long.
Don't just expect your employer to know what you need. Speak up.
Exactly. And, you know, if you think your employer's denied you an accommodation that is reasonable, or if you think you've been discriminated against because of your disability, you know, get some legal advice. Talk to a lawyer.
That's always good advice.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing to think back to the Sutton case and how, you know, one case about needing glasses opened up all these discussions. We've talked about how disability is defined, how legal interpretation can change things, Congress disagreeing with the Supreme Court, and now this whole complicated issue of reasonable accommodation.
It just goes to show you how, you know, court decisions, they can have such a big impact. They change how we understand things, and the law, well, it's always changing.
Very well said.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember how we were talking about the regarded as prong of the ADA?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one.
It is. I think now is the perfect time to jump into that.
I agree. It can be confusing, but it's super important for understanding what all the ADA protects. It's not just about having an actual disability, you know? It's about what happens when people treat you like you have one, even if you don't.
Okay. Can you remind us again, what is regarded as disabled even mean under the ADA, just to refresh our memories?
Basically, it means that you have protection under the ADA, even if technically you don't meet the definition of disabled. Like, if you're treated as if you have a disability that would substantially limit a major life activity, even if you don't actually have it.
So even if you wouldn't be considered disabled, legally speaking, if your employer thinks you are, you might still be protected.
Right. The regarded as prong is about fighting discrimination that's based on, you know, perceptions and stereotypes, not actual limitations.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But in Sutton, the sisters tried that argument. They said United regarded them as disabled because of their vision, and the court didn't buy it. Why not?
Well, the Supreme Court, they said that just being seen as unfit for one specific job, well, that's not enough to trigger the ADA's regarded as protection. They said it has to be more than that. The employer has to think that your impairment would limit you in a whole bunch of different jobs.
So United thinking the sisters couldn't be pilots, that wasn't enough. It had to be more general than that.
Exactly. And here's where things get, well, they get even more complicated after the ADA.
Oh, I was wondering when the ADA would come back into the picture.
Remember, the ADA says that you're not supposed to consider most mitigating measures when you're deciding if someone has a disability.
Like glasses, right?
Yeah. But if you can't consider those things, how do you prove someone regarded you as disabled? I mean, those measures aren't part of the equation anymore.
Wow, that's a good point. So what happens now? How are these cases decided?
Honestly, it's still a bit of a gray area. The courts are still figuring out exactly how to apply the regarded as prong in this new context.
So no easy answers.
Not really. It's an area of the law that's still developing. A lot of times it just comes down to the specific facts of the case. But there are some general principles the courts look at.
Our listeners, especially those lawyers and law students tuning in, They'd love to hear about those. What are the courts looking for? What are the key factors?
One big one is, you know, what was the employer's perception based on? Was it based on some kind of myth or fear or a stereotype? Or was it based on actual facts about what the person could or couldn't do?
So if an employer just assumes someone can't do a job because of something they believe about the person, even if that belief is wrong, that could be a problem.
Exactly. Let's say someone, they had cancer a while back, but now it's in remission. But their employer doesn't want to promote them because they're worried the cancer will come back, even though the doctors say there's no reason to think that.
Okay, yeah.
That could be regarded as discrimination because the employer is making decisions based on their fears, not on what the person can actually do right now.
Right. They're discriminating based on a perception, not on reality.
Exactly. It's also important to remember that the perceived impairment, the thing the employer is worried about, it has to be something that's covered under the ADA.
So it has to be a real physical or mental impairment, something that actually could limit a major life activity.
That's right. So if an employer just thinks someone is, you know, clumsy or shy or something like that, that wouldn't be enough. It has to be the type of impairment the ADA was designed to address.
Okay, so it's not just any negative perception. It has to be about a specific type of impairment. So to recap, you have to show that your employer treated you differently because of a wrong idea they had about an impairment. And that impairment has to be something that the ADA actually covers.
That's a perfect summary. And it shows how important this whole regarded as thing is. It means that discrimination, it's not always about what you can't do. It can also be about fear and bias and just plain prejudice.
And that's something the ADA is trying to prevent. But let's be realistic. Proving you were discriminated against because of how someone sees you, that's got to be a lot harder than proving discrimination based on an actual, you know, documented disability.
You're absolutely right. A lot of times you have to rely on what we call circumstantial evidence, like what other people heard your boss say, or you have to look for times when the employer treated other employees differently.
So it's not always a slam dunk case.
Yeah.
But still really important, especially for people who maybe don't fit neatly into the ADA's definition of disabled, but are still facing unfair treatment because of how other people see them.
Couldn't agree more. And it brings us back to the Sutton case and how important it was. Even though the sisters lost their case, and even though the ADA didn't completely change how the courts see the regarded as prong, their story is a good reminder that
the law is always changing.
Yes. Yeah. And that what might not have been a good legal argument a few years ago, well, it might have a different outcome today.
So stay informed.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we've covered the regarded as prong, but there's one more piece to this whole puzzle. This whole question of, you know, an individual's need for accommodation and an employer's right to set standards for the job. How do those two things fit together?
Oh, yeah, the age-old question, right? Accommodation versus qualification. It's a tough one.
It is, and it's one we're going to tackle head-on after a quick break. Welcome back, everyone. So right before the break, we were getting ready to dive into this tricky balance between reasonable accommodation and, you know, an employer's right to set standards for the job.
Yeah, it's a really interesting area of the law. On one side, you've got the rights of people with disabilities to have, you know, equal opportunities in the workplace.
Right. And then on the other side, you've got employers who need to be sure their employees can actually, you know, do the job.
Exactly. It's kind of like a legal tug of war.
Yeah.
Trying to find that sweet spot where everyone is protected.
So how does the ADA, how does it try to find that balance?
Well, the ADA, it tries to strike a balance by saying that employers, they have to provide what they call reasonable accommodations to qualified individuals with disabilities, unless, of course, doing so would cause, you know, significant difficulty or expense for the employer.
Okay, hold on. There's a lot of legal terms in there. Can you unpack that a bit? What exactly does reasonable accommodation even mean?
It's a pretty broad term. And what's reasonable, well, it can be different depending on, you know, the person's disability and the kind of job they have. But some common examples would be things like, you know, making changes to the physical workspace, like making it accessible, or maybe modifying equipment, or changing the work schedule, providing assistive devices, or even offering, you know, training or support.
So basically, removing anything that might be preventing someone with a disability from doing their job well. But you mentioned there's a limit to this, right?
Right. The ADA, it only requires accommodations that are reasonable. It can't be, you know, super expensive or really difficult for the employer to actually make the changes.
So if, like, the accommodation would mean they had to like rebuild the whole workplace or it costs a ton of money, could the employer say, no, that's not reasonable?
Exactly. That's what we call the undue hardship defense. Courts would look at things like, you know, how much it would cost to do the accommodation, how big the company is, how much money they have, and, you know, what kind of impact the change would have on the business.
Okay, so there's a lot to consider. It sounds like it can be hard to know where that line is sometimes.
There definitely is. There's a lot of gray area. That's why it's super important for both employers and employees to, you know, to really understand their rights and what they're required to do under the ADA. Open communication, it really is key here.
So what can employers do to make sure they're, you know, doing the right thing, following the law?
Well, the first thing is to have a clearly written policy, something that spells out their commitment to providing reasonable accommodations.
So don't just assume everyone knows the rules. Put it in writing.
Exactly. And then it's really important to train managers and supervisors, you know, give them the tools to handle accommodation requests, teach them how to have those conversations with employees and how to figure out what's reasonable and what might be, you know, asking too much.
So it sounds like good communication and, you know, working together, that's really important. Finding solutions that work for everyone.
That's right. And for employees, it's important to remember that they have a responsibility too. You know, they need to actually ask for accommodations and to do it clearly and in a timely manner.
So don't just sit there and suffer in silence. Don't expect your employer to, you know, to read your mind. You've got to speak up, explain what you need. And, you know, if it's helpful, provide documentation.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you think that your employer has denied you an accommodation and you think that accommodation was reasonable, or if you think that you've been discriminated against because of your disability, it's really important to seek legal advice. Talk to a lawyer.
Good advice. You know, thinking back to the Sutton case, it's amazing how, like, one case about a vision requirement for pilots has sparked all of these, you know, complex discussions. We've covered so much: how disability is defined, the role of these mitigating measures, how legal interpretation can really change things, how Congress, you know, actually took action, the whole regarded as prong, and now this whole complicated area of reasonable accommodation.
It really shows you, you know, how complicated this area of the law is, how it's connected to, you know, what people think about disability, and how important it is to have these conversations, you know, to keep talking about this stuff.
I completely agree. Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive for today. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, just a reminder that, you know, this area of the law, it's constantly evolving, always changing. New issues are coming up all the time. The ADA, it's really about making sure that people with disabilities have equal opportunities, you know, a chance to live their lives to the fullest. It's an important law, and it's worth, you know, it's worth fighting for.
Very well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, everyone. We'll see you next time for another fascinating exploration of the legal world.